Wednesday, the 13th of February, Zion Adar Rishon, Rabbi Leib Klemen, learning to listen, hearing what others mean, even when that's not what they say.
Look at this. There's a pasuk in a well-known chazal in Parshas Pekudei. The pasuk says, "Tzaludin Ori Ben Chur Lamati Yehuda Asad Kol Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe." Tzaludin, the son of Ori, the son of Chur, tribe of Yehuda, did everything Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe that Kodesh Baruch Hu commanded Moshe. Rashi's bothered because the pasuk should say that Tzaludin did everything that the Kodesh Baruch Hu said. But it says the Kodesh Baruch Hu did, or Moshe told him, but it says he did everything the Kodesh Baruch Hu told Moshe. Rashi says, Asher tibo so Moshe anxies. Pasuk doesn't say that Bezalel did everything that Moshe told him. Elakol Asher tiba Hashem is Moshe. It says he did everything that Kodesh Baruch Hu commanded Moshe Rabbeinu. Even things that Moshe Rabbeinu did not tell Bezalel, he schemed daito shel Bezalel. Bezalel was able to figure out on his own. Moshe tzivu leBezalel. What was the problem? Moshe Rabbeinu commanded Bezalel. Lasos tchila kelim. First he should make the kelim. The achkach mishkan. Afterwards he should build the mishkan. Amar lo Bezalel. Bezalel said, Minaga olam lasos tchila bais. The minaga olam is first to build the bais. The achkach meisim kelim besocho. Afterwards we put the kelim inside of the bais. Amar lo Moshe. Moshe said, Kach shemati pi Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's exactly what I heard from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Amar lo Moshe, Betzel kel ha'ita. It's as if you were in God's shadow. It's as if you were there and you heard it yourself. That's exactly what a Kodesh Baruch Hu told me. That's what Betzel did. First Mishkan, Yachkach Kelim. So, we're familiar with the Chazal, but there's something that's extraordinarily bothersome in this chazal, if you think about it carefully. What happened here was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, you should go ahead and build the Mishkan and build the Kelim. And when Moshe Rabbeinu said this over to Bezalel, Moshe Rabbeinu flipped it. And he said, you should build Kelim and Mishkan. Now what's so bothersome here is that we're entirely dependent on the Mesorah of Moshe Rabbeinu for the Torah. And if Moshe Rabbeinu changes anything, then we're in serious trouble. And here Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu flipped it exactly backwards. And were it not for Bezalel catching this, so miyodea. So this is a very, very problematic Chazal, the Pashtus. The Achronim are aware of this, they deal with it. We'll get to that shortly. First question, how could Moshe Rabbeinu possibly have flipped a chazal? Flipped a statement from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Second question here, obviously, is Bezalel's objection is very strange. Bezalel says, the minig olam is first to build the bais and then to put the kelim into the bais, to build the kelim afterwards. What kind of an objection is this? The minig olam, when you build a house, is to do it in this kind of a way. This is a Kodesh Baruch Hu who's telling us how to build a mishkan. Building a mishkan should be anything like the way that human beings should construct homes. What was the havamina? Bezalel is speaking to the greatest Navi who will ever live. And the Navi says, this is how you should do it. And Bezalel has an objection. That's not the minaga olam. Can you imagine if a law gives you a psak? And you say to him, it's not the minaga olam. Mach flatly. This is the Navi Hashem. What's the difference? Okay, take this scene, put it on the side for a minute. We'll come back to it. There's another very strange passage in Shmuel Aleph. The passage there is a very famous passage. The incarnate of evil, Amalek, has slipped into the hands of Sheol. And Sheol has an opportunity to make the greatest tikkun in history. He can now wipe Ra off the planet. And the Navi comes to him, Shmuel comes to him, and he says, V'yata, Shema l'kol divrei Hashem. Watch how many times you hear the language of Shema in this passage. Listen carefully to the words of Hashem. Lech, the kisis Amalek. Should go and attack Amalek. The chramtimus, kol asher lo, destroy everything they have. Velo tachmol alav, don't have mercy. So that alone should really complete the tzivui. The tzivui was, destroy everything, lo tachmol, don't have mercy. That's very clear. And again, the pasuk says, the chramtim et kol asher lo. There's no need to say anything further. But just in case, Shmuel goes further. They mata mi'ish ad isha. Kill the men, kill the women. Mi'olo v'ad yonik. Kill the babies, kill the nurslings. Mishor v'ad seh. Kill the oxen, kill the sheep. Mi'gamo v'ad chamor. Kill the camels and kill the donkeys. Tremendous repetition here, making clear everything should be wiped out. Scene continues. Yavu shal ad ir Amalek. Shal came to ir Amalek. V'yar b'nachel. He engaged in some sort of a battle in the Nachal. The Rishonim here say that it was not just a physical battle, there was a spiritual battle going on as well. And the Pasuk then says, V'yachmol shal v'ha'am al agag. The initial commandment that was given was, destroy everything, right? Don't have mercy. And the Pasuk says, V'yachmol shal, shall have mercy. And he didn't destroy Agag, Valmeti Vitzon, he didn't destroy the best of the sheep, Valbakar, Valmishnim, Valakarim, Valkolatov, Velo Avul Achrimam. He decided not to destroy all the best of the livestock that was there. Exactly Bidiyu Kineged the Tzivui that he was given. The Kolam Malacha Hanamivza, Vanames, Oto Achrimu. Anything that was cheap, he destroyed. But exactly the commandment that he was given to destroy everything, he violated. So, if we stopped here, this would already be one of the strangest scenes ever. Shaul was a great man. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He was a tremendous Yorei Shamayim. He was told explicitly, don't have mercy, destroy everything. And the next thing the Pasuk tells you is, he had mercy and he didn't destroy everything. Now, you would never make that mistake. We don't know anyone who would make this mistake. And Shaul would make this mistake. It gets worse. Shmuel comes to Shaul, the Yomer Lo. Shaul says to Shmuel, Hakimosi Yisvar Hashem. I fulfilled the word of Hashem. What is Shaul thinking? If I had done this, if you had done this, and the Navi showed up, we would be beating our chests. We would feel so terrible. And what does Shaul say? Baruch Hashem, I fulfilled the Dvar Hashem. The Yomer Shmuel El Shaul. Shmuel says, what are you talking about? Uma kol hatzon hazeh ba'oznai. What is the sound of these sheep that I hear in my ears? Again, that sound of hearing. V'yomer Shaul. So Shaul says, B'tzminus. Oh, don't worry about those sheep. Me'amalekai heviyum. I brought those from the Amalekites. Don't worry, that's nothing. Those are just Amalekite sheep. Asher chama ha'am al meite vatzon, because the Am had mercy on the best of the tzon, the bakar. L'man zavuach l'Hashem, we're going to bring korbanos to Kodesh Baruch Hu. V'tiyoter echrimu, all the extras we destroyed. But this stuff we're going to bring as korbanos, this we saved. V'yomer Shmuel, Shmuel says, Lama lo shamat b'kol Hashem? Why didn't you listen to the voice of Hashem? V'yomer Shaul, Shaul said, Asher shamat b'kol Hashem? What are you talking about? I listened to exactly what Hashem said. That this must be one of the most bizarre scenes in all of Tanakh. What is going on here? V'yomer Shmuel, Shmuel said to him, Chafetz Hashem ba'olos v'zvachim ishmo b'kol Hashem? Do you think Hashem wants these korbanos like he wants? Again, this lashon, kishmo b'kol Hashem, like he wants you to listen to him? Hine, shmo mizevach, Kodesh Baruch Hu likes listening better than he likes korbanos. Tov l'hakshiv mechelim elim. It's better to listen than to offer the fat of rams. At this point, Shaul is still not moved. He doesn't understand what he did wrong. Then Shmuel says, Ki chatas kesem, Mary. For these korbanos of magic, these magical korbanos, chatas kesem, Mary, they are rebellion. At that point, Shaul looks at him and realizes something is terrible here. Something terribly has happened. V'avon terafim heftzer. and your stubbornness is the sin of Terafim, the sin of idols. And at that point, Shaul wakes up, realizes the mistake he's made, but Yomer Shaul, El Shmuel, Shaul says, Chatasi, Kiyavarti et Piyashem, I sinned, I violated God's commandment, that Zarech and your commandment, Kiyaresi Yisa'am, that Shema B'Kolam, for I was afraid of the people and I listened to their voice instead. So besides the obvious question here, which is how could Shaul have done this in the first place? What was Shaul thinking? And the whole time this dialogue is going on, Shaul is defending himself as if he listened to God. Fine, see, you could have the Hava Mina that Shaul just lost his mind. But then at the end when he says this is a Chatas Kesem, immediately Shaul wakes up, realizes he's made a terrible error, and does tshuva. What woke him up? What is this mention of Chatas Kesem? What exactly is a Chatas Kesem that suddenly Shaul realized what happened? So we have a very strange scene with Moshe Rabbeinu. Apparently a perversion of the Masorah there, which can't be, but it looks like it. And then there's a very strange scene with Shaul. So, to understand what's happening here, we'll start with something very broad and very basic, and slowly we'll move towards a particular solution. The broad and basic concept is this. The universe is organized in such a way that at every given moment, there are really only two choices in front of a person. Those two choices are to be a giver or to be a taker. And in fact, the entire human mitos tree is organized such that at the very top of the tree is a single choice that we make in every single moment. And that is, are we going to be a no-tainer or are we going to be a no-tail? This is Reb Dessler's famous concept. When we arrive in Olam Haba, so there's a concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu showing us why we're going to experience the Olam Haba, we're going to experience these Matznik B'din, so to speak. And when he does that, he shows you every single billionth of a billionth of a billionth of a second of your life. And each one of those moments is represented by either a green light or a red light. I either was a giver at that moment or I was a taker at that moment. And of course, as you move down the mitos tree, giving and taking starts to take more subtle flavors. But essentially, the basic choice that I'm making at each moment was, will I be a giver or a taker? In giving and taking, there are essentially two categories. There's something that I would call a gashmi giving and taking and a ruchni giving and taking. Gashmi giving and taking is what physically happens in the universe. The ruchni giving and taking is what is my kavana? What's the kavana behind the maisa? So here it turns out there's four possible combinations. There's a physical giving, which is a spiritual giving. So a physical giving, which is a spiritual giving, might be that I come home Erev Shabbos and I have flowers, and I give my wife the flowers. That was a physical giving. And what was my kavanah? My kavanah was a spiritual giving. I wanted her to have a beautiful home for Shabbos, so I brought the flowers. It's a spiritual giving and a physical giving. There's a second combination here. There could be a physical taking, which is a spiritual giving. So, what's the physical taking? When I bring home the flowers, my wife accepts them. That's a physical taking. What's her kavana? So, Nebuchadnezzar, she left out the flowers. She wants to make me happy. She receives them from me. Her kavana is to give to me. Her kavana is to be meitiv. So, she accepts the flowers. That's ruchnius. Mitzad ruchnius, it's a giving. Mitzad gashmius, it's a receiving. It's a taking. There's another possible combination. Another combination is a physical giving, which is really a spiritual taking. My Rebbe warned against this. He said there are many people who they do lots of favors for people, big favors, and they're always doing favors for people, but they will never allow anyone to do a favor back for them. Why not? Because as long as they're doing favors for others, all those other people are indebted to them. And because they're indebted to them, in a way, they're subservient to them. They're lower than them. And there are people who like to keep others lower than them. So in order to keep all the others lower than them, they always do lots of favors for others, but they never allow anyone to do a favor back. They don't want anyone to be able to pay off their debt. My Rebbe said that when you do a great chesed for somebody, as soon as possible, you should be mavakish from them a small tova. Why? Because when you ask a small tova for them, they fool themselves into thinking they've paid off the entire big favor that you did for them. And then they feel like the debt is paid, and they walk away clean as opposed to feeling subservient and indebted. There is, then, a physical giving, which is really a spiritual taking. It's a selfish kavana, but there's a physical giving that goes on. And then finally, the fourth area would be a physical taking, which is a spiritual taking. And that's a man walks into a bank and puts a gun to the bank teller and says, give me all the money. He's physically taking, and his intention is entirely selfish. It turns out, when you see this framework, if you want to be always on the side of giving mitzad ruchnius, meaning your kavana is always to give, you must develop two skills, one of which we speak about very often in shiurim, and one of which we almost never speak about. One skill you have to develop is to be a physical giver, which is a spiritual giver, and that we speak about often. The concept of chesed we speak about often. What we almost never speak about is how if you want to be a constant giver, mitzad ruchnius, if your intention, if your kavana is always going to be for the other, you also have to learn how to accept, how to receive. If you don't know how to receive, if you don't know how to take from another, then so, there will be times when you'll be acting very selfishly because the other needs to give to you, but you won't let them. So it turns out to be a giver at all times, one must master the skill of physically receiving. The midah of being a makabel is called in the language of kelim, the midah of being a bais. Because a bias is something which accepts things and then holds those things. When I'm a makabel, I turn myself into a bias of sorts. If I want somebody to dwell with me, I must create a bias for them, so to speak. I must make a place that can receive their presence. The pasuk says, "V'suli mikdash, v'shachanti v'socham." In order for Kodesh Baruch Hu to be with me, I have to create this place for him to come and be. How do we make ourselves into the bais? Or as my Rebbe called it, how does one become, and he said this in the most praiseworthy terms, how does one become a baal habais, that is a master of receiving, l'shem tov, but a master of receiving? So there's a Zohar in Parshas Shmos that says as follows, Kol makabel me'achra. Anyone who receives from another, iu beis lahu diyahiv, he becomes a home for the one who's giving. So it turns out that the only way to create that home for the other is to learn to receive from that other. When I can learn to receive from the other, then I create a place where they can come and dwell with me. Therefore, Yaakov is called the Yoshev Ohel. Targum Yonason says, what does it mean, Yoshev Ohel? Targum Yonason says, Tava Ulpan. Yaakov was not passively a Yoshev Ohel. Elamai, he demanded instruction, that is, he tried to pull things into his bais. He was a Yoshev Ohel, he tried to pull things into his bais. He made himself into a place where Torah could dwell, and then he sucked Torah into that spot. He was a receiver in the most active sense. What do we see from this? If you want to be a makabel, so the Torah makabel is somebody who is makabel actively, not passively. Someone who's tava upana. Rabbi Rucham from the Mir. So he talks about the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Hei. The Gemara there says, "Ezehu el zar shibugufo shel adam." Who is the el zar? Translate literally, the god of Tsar, the god of disconnection, of isolation, of aloneness, that dwells within the body of a person. What does it mean to be involved in disconnection, isolation, and aloneness? It's the exact opposite of Ruchni giving. That's Ruchni taking. It's where I surround myself with mirrors, and all I can see is myself, and there is nobody else on the planet but me. Ezu el Tsar shu b'gufo sha'adam, hevi omer zeh yetzahara. The yetzahara is what causes us to go into the state of absolute taking. Rabbi Rucham says, how can I make sure that I stay out of this state of El Zar? And he says, very powerful language, Mawa derech ha'avoda l'nikayon habayit l'utarato. What is the derech of avoda that allows you to clean the house and to purify it? And again, in the language of Kelim, cleaning the house meant making yourself into a person who could be makabel. In order to be makabel, you must see the other in front of you. You have to take down the mirrors, break down the barriers, and then you can be makabel from another. He says, how can you be liot panui umucham lekabalah? How can you make yourself into somebody who can accept? Amar Kosov, the Pasuk says, Shma Ami Va'idabach. What does it mean, Shma Ami, that language of listening? Masrani Va'idabach. I'm warning you, and I'm giving testimony. Ki ein lecha eitza acheret. There is no other eitza. Shelo yebecha elzar, that will avoid being dominated by this elzar, by the sense of absolute selfishness and self-obsession, this egoism which makes me forget that there's anybody else in the world. Maya eitza, what is the eitza? Yisrael, in tishmali. In tishmali. There are two organs of giving in the human being. One is the peh. That is the organ of giving when it's going to be a physical giving and a spiritual giving. What about when it's going to be a physical receiving and a spiritual giving? The other organ is the ear. That is the organ that allows us to be a bias, that allows us to take things in. Shmiya, zu hakol lekabbalah. Shmiya is the essence of what it means to receive, and he says it's the only way to take down the Elzar. If you want to be connected to another, if you want to be able to receive from them, then you must break down the barriers, and the way that we do that is with the organ on either side of our brain. Rabbeinu Yonah in Mishle on the Pasuk, the Ish Shomea Lenetzach Yedaber, comments as follows. Hinei Ksiv, the Pasuk says, Goy Asher Lo Tishma Lashono, the Jews will chas v'chalila be attacked by a nation Asher Lo Tishma Lashono. Now what does that mean, that we won't hear their Lashon? Does that mean they'll be mute? They won't be able to speak, the nation that attacks us? So obviously not. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Kar el Havana Shmiya. When it says, Lo Tishma Lashon, means we won't understand their language. That means, whenever you see the language of Shmiya, in Chazal's understanding, that means Havana, but I understand what the other is saying. Because the whole concept of hearing is not complete. In Lo Yavin Ma Shishma, if you don't understand what you're hearing. Umekevan Shikach Advari. Kamoshem the emes, if you take the words literally as they're said, the itzafem, and you guard them in your heart, below tosefes, without any additions, the chisar, without taking away anything, that's called shmiya. Ki bizeh shalem inyan hashmiya. At that point, you understand what you've actually heard, and therefore it's called the inyan of shmiya. This concept could explain what is otherwise a very difficult gemara in Sota. The Gemara there, Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph, reads as follows. There's a pasuk in Dvarim that says, "V'amar aleihem." The Kohen says to Klal Yisrael before they go into battle, "Shma Yisrael, atem kreivim hayom l'milchama." Listen, Jews, today you're going into milchama. So the Gemara says, "Maishna Shma Yisrael." Why does the pasuk say, Shma Yisrael, today you're going into Melchama? The Kohen should just get up and say, gentlemen, we're going to war. Why does it start off, Shma Yisrael? Amar lehen HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the Jews, Afilu lo kayamtim ela kriya shma shachris v'arvis. Even if the only mitzvah that you kept was saying kriya shma v'kavana, iyatem nimsan v'yadam. That's enough of a schus for you to be matzliach in this war. You will be matzliach, you will triumph just in the schus of Shma. Now, it's a very bothersome Gemara. Why? Here, what the Gemara is claiming is that Shema Yisrael are two words that hint to the saying of Kriyas Shema. If I would ask you, please tell me, pick two words which encapsulate the essence of Kriyas Shema. Which two words would you pick? Mustafa, you wouldn't pick Shema Yisrael. You pick Hashem Echad. Those are the two words which are the essence of Kriyas Shema, Hashem Echad. And yet when the Gemara says it's hinting to Shema Yisrael with two words, the Gemara says it's Shema Yisrael. Why doesn't the Kohen say it? The Kohen wants to say the schus of Shema Yisrael is going to protect you, is going to be made in Alecha in this next war. Why doesn't the Kohen say Hashem Echad, we're going to Milchama? That's what he should say. Why does it say Shema Yisrael? There's enough two Ikar words of Kriyas Shema, I would think. Comes the Gemara and says that my das is exactly wrong. The two Ikar words of Shema Yisrael are Shema Yisrael. Hashem Echad is Agav. Shema Yisrael is the Ikar. Why? If I listen, then I can connect to Kodesh Baruch Hu. If I'm not listening, then I have no relationship to Kodesh Baruch Hu whatsoever. Rabbi Yochum says, he says, Im a pasuk b'dvarim kivein l'mitzvah shema. If this pasuk in his warning to Klal Yisrael is talking about the mitzvah shema, lama lo hizkir ikar hamilim. Why doesn't the pasuk mention the essential words Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad? Kamash malan shema hu ikar. It turns out that shema is the ikar. L'chein ikar kabbalas ol malchut shemaim. That's why kabbalas ol malchut shemaim is called kabbalah. He says daika. It's kabbalah dafka. The whole inyan of kriyat shema is being mekabel. L'chein kriyat shema matchil b'shema. That's why kriyat shema begins with the word shema. Tia keli. Make yourself into a keli, a bite. Umasayim be'echad. It finishes with echad. V'yelecha yachasim abori. If you make yourself into a keli, if you learn to receive also, then you can be a person who's successful in the relationship. But if you can't receive, if you're only a giver, if you're only a mashpi, if you can't be a makabel, you will never be matzliach in relationships. That's what the poskim say, according to the Gemara and Sota. Now we can come and I think we can answer our first question, which is, how could Moshe Rabbeinu, l'chora, have made an error in transmission? And of course the answer is, there is no error in transmission going on here whatsoever. The Maharal, the Gur Aryeh, explains the following. Moshe Rabbeinu was a gonatzum. He also had a tremendous insight into human beings. He was looking for someone to construct the bite. That's what they were about to build. They were about to build a bite. And he chose Bezalel because Bezalel was a Baal HaBait. He was a master of this trait of Kabbalah. He was a master at aggressively hearing, crawling out of his own head, crawling into the head of the other, and truly understanding, given who this person is, what they must be saying with those words. Therefore, the Maharal explains, when Moshe Rabbeinu began to speak, he said, build the Kalim and build the Mishkan. But Salel, being an expert listener, was not confused at all by what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Why? But Salel said to himself, who is this person who is speaking to me? This person who is speaking to me is Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the greatest Talmud Chacham on the planet. The first lesson that we learn when we're in Yeshiva is you say the most important thing first and the second most important thing second. Moshe Rabbeinu, being a Ben Torah, Mistama, is saying the most important thing first and the second most important thing second. What's the most important, the Kalim or the Mishkan? So obviously, the Kalim are more Ikari than the Mishkan. And so when Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking, he had to set an order of Hashivus. How do we know, Agav, that the Kalim are more important than the Mishkan? Because Kahas carried the Kalim. And Merari carried the Mishkan. And Kahas was the Iker line of Levi. So therefore you see, the Kalim were the Ikar. Moshe Rabbeinu, being a Talmud Chacham, said the Ikar first, and then he said the Tofel. So he said first the Kalim and then the Mishkan. But Salel, being a Baal Hashmia, who's a master of Kabbalah, got out of himself, crawled into Moshe Rabbeinu's head, and understood he's speaking like a Talmud Chacham, because that's who he is. But he said nothing about the order of construction. Then Bezalel said, since the order of construction was Satum, he never mentioned the order of construction, he only spoke about Hashivus, Bezalel said, I assume you want me to construct this as people normally construct things, which is first the Mishkan and then the Keli. And so, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu said, it's amazing, I never even mentioned the order of construction and you figured it out. Very nice. It's as if you were there, it's as if you were listening. Right? What does it mean it's Bezalel, you were Bezalel Kel? It's as if you were there, because you could hear things that I never said. Bezalel, the Baal Habayi, so to speak, the master of the Mishkan, was a master of Kabbalah. That's why he was chosen for that job. What we just learned is potentially a very dangerous lesson. We just learned that you must be Tava Upana. You must actively get out of your own head and imagine this person who's speaking, given who they are, what do they mean? In other words, do not ever listen literally. Listening literally means interpreting the other's words according to your definitions. And Moshe Rabbeinu, right, was not speaking the same language as Bezalel. Bezalel had to crawl out of Bezalel's head to understand what Moshe Rabbeinu was really saying. But if you're not going to listen literally, if you're going to crawl out of your head, ignore your definitions, and imagine what the other person might mean by this, you could get yourself into very, very big trouble. When you start ignoring the actual words that were said, bad things could happen. So I have a couple of examples of how we can get ourselves into trouble. The first is a Medrash in Shmos Rabba. The Medrash in Shmos Rabba says as follows. It's based on a pasuk in Kohelis. Panisi ani lirot hochma. I turn to see hochma. Beholelus v'sichlus. And wildness and foolishness. Kima adam shiavo achrei melech. Who is a person who could come and contradict the king at the Sher Kfar Asu, what the king has already done? A pasuk is in Nehemar al Shlomo v'al Moshe. The Medrash says this pasuk is talking, it's accusing Moshe, and it's accusing Shlomo. Then the Midrash goes on and explains, what was Shlomo's mistake that this pasuk is accusing him with? Al Shlomo ketzad, kishenatan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Torah LeYisrael, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came and he gave the Torah to Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it the way that it was supposed to be. Amad Shlomo Melech v'hechkim, agzeir asof. Shlomo Melech came, and he made himself more wise than Hashem's gzeira, kavayocho. V'amar, why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu say that a king should limit the number of wives that he has? Lo bishvil shelo yasur levavo isn't the reason that his heart won't be turned. Ani adev v'libi lo yasur. However, I can have more wives than is prescribed by the Torah, but my heart will not turn. Why? Because I have wisdom. Maksiv be, what's written about him? The Hila ate Ziknat Shlomo, when Shlomo got older, Nashav Hituas Levavo, his wives caused his heart to turn. Amar Shlomo, Shlomo Melech said, Mashi iti mechkim al divrei Torah, this that I made myself wiser than the words of Torah, Vaiti mar la tzmi, Shani Yodea Das Torah, I made it seem as if I knew Das Torah. Otaha Bina, Votaha Das, that Bina, that Das, Shel Holelus v'sichlus hayu, this was wildness and foolishness, Lama, Ki maha adam shavu achrei melech. How can a person come afterwards and interpret the king's words? Who is the person who can be maharher after Hashem's midos and after his gzeros? If a Kodesh Baruch Hu said lo yarbe, he meant lo yarbe, period. So I can't come afterwards and say, well, what did the Kodesh Baruch Hu really mean by that? When Hashem said lo yarbe, he really meant yarbe. I can't do such a thing. You can get yourself in very big trouble if you don't listen literally. I'll give you another example of someone who got themselves in very big trouble not listening literally. There was a fellow by the name of Shaul who was told, kill everybody, wipe them all out. Every single sheep, every ox, all the people. How did he not kill everybody? And how could he have defended himself to Shaul? So the answer is, Shaul understood, you cannot listen literally. You must crawl out of your head into the other's head and imagine what does the other really mean by those words. Given who they are, what do they mean? So Shaul interpreted. He didn't listen literally, he interpreted. That alone was not the mistake, because as we saw, we're not allowed to listen literally. We must understand what's really being said. We can't understand things in our terminology. We have to understand things in the Kodesh Baruch Hu's terminology or in the Navi's terminology. But once you're not going to listen according to your definitions, then how do you ensure you're actually going to get it right? How do you hear what the other person is really saying, even though in your terminology, that's not what they meant? So here, there are a few techniques, which I was makabel from my Rebbe. And those techniques are as follows. The first is, and this is now extremely practical, it's very important, before you hear what somebody has to say, that you identify your own bias. What would you like them to be saying? Once you've identified your own bias, what you would like them to be saying, you can now take that, set that aside, and hear what they're really saying. But if you don't identify what your Yetzer Hara would like them to be saying, then you might play that interpretation into their words. I'll give you an example of where someone got into very big trouble doing this. The pasuk says, a very, very famous discussion at the beginning of the Torah. The Kodesh Baruch Hu says to Adam, don't eat from the tree. On the day you eat from the tree, you'll die. Adam says to Chava, don't eat from the tree. On the day you eat from the tree, you'll die. I'm just going with the Torah of Iksav here. Then Chava's standing by the tree, and the Nachash says, what's with the tree? And Chava says, on the day that I eat from it or I touch it, I will die. So Chazal want to know, Mehechitesi, where does this come from that on the day that you touch the tree, you'll die? So we all know the Medrash Rabbah, right? The Medrash Rabbah says that Adam Rishon made up a Derabbanan, and he just failed to tell his wife it was Derabbanan and it caused problems. That's the Medrash Rabbah. I ran across an unbelievable Yalkut Shimoni. The Yalkut Shimoni says exactly the opposite of the Medrash Rabbah. The Yalkut Shimoni says, this is what happened in Gan Eden. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Adam, don't eat from the tree on the day you eat from the tree, you'll die. Adam told Chava, don't eat from the tree, for on the day you eat from the tree, you'll die. Chava was standing by the tree, and Nachash said to Chava, what's with the tree? And Chava made up a lie. Chava said, on the day that I eat from it or I touch it, I'll die. The snake pushed her up against the tree. She banged against the tree. She saw she didn't die. When she realized she didn't die by touching the tree, she said, oh, I won't die by eating it. And she took it and she ate from it. That's Yalkut Shimoni. Makes no sense. She made up the lie. Why would she think when she bumped into the tree she was going to die? She knows. She made it up. That was her own chumra that she created. So why would you think she's going to die? So in order to understand this, I have to describe an experience to you that I have in the classroom very often. I teach very often. One of the courses I teach are brand new Balos Tshuva. They're actually pre-Balos Tshuva. I'm finishing up. Is it? Okay, we're done now. Okay, fine. So I won't tell you the story now, another time. Okay. That's right, fine. Okay, another time. Close to Shao Shao. I didn't realize that. Sorry.